The audio got messed up. My recorders weren't working correctly. So I am recording this by looking at the smart board and hoping that I remember what we went over in class. The first thing is we are still looking under .NET at the arrays zipped. And that is where we're starting. I am looking at a two-dimensional array. And the two-dimensional array can be set up implicitly or in the conventional way. The conventional way has the name of the array and then the two indexes that will tell you the diagonal and the x-axis and the y-axis. And so I have in this particular problem got an array for the city name that you're traveling from, an array for the city name that you're traveling to, and then I have the price, and the price has the from followed by the to indexes to come up with the price that you will have to pay. In the example that we're looking at in the smart board, I have commented out the conventional way of doing the array, and I have included the implicit way, which actually doesn't show up for a couple of screens. It shows up in part on the next screen because I did a copy and paste so we could compare. The entire implicit would include four lines because there are four cities that I can travel from: Boston, New York, Austin, and Washington, D.C. So the first ones that you see here are dealing with just the first two. Okay. This has the if statements in it, where I am checking to make sure it's numeric and that it is in the right range. If the from city is wrong, then I drop down to the else that goes with it, and I have to ask about the to city. If the from city is correct, then I can just continue on and ask about the to city. They both have to be accurate before I can move the information out. And when I move the information out, I go to the price array and I put the from pointer and the to pointer. Okay? And that doesn't matter whether it's an implicit array or whether it's not. The next screen actually shows the implicit array completely and also shows when I enter codes what happens to get the price. I go to the array to get the names, and so I'm going and getting the array for Boston too, and then I'm getting the name Istanbul, and then I am going to the implicit array and getting the price. Okay, and I've shown the subscripts for the first two things, 00 and 01. 01 gets me Boston to Baku because Boston was the first city from and Baku was the second city to. Baku being the capital of Azerbaijan. Okay, then I moved on, and I am looking at an example where I am in very much control of the buttons. So there is a lot here where I'm enabling and setting the enabling to true and setting the enabling to false. What I'm trying to do is make sure that the user can't do the wrong thing. I'm trying to guide them to do the right thing. So when I hit the start gather, it comes up and asks for the number of original entries that I want to put in the array. And I said 3. Okay, so that will set up and allow me to take this array that I have got a cum array as integer but no particular size. When I put in the number, that number is going to be used to set the size of the array. And I do that with the redim. I'm redimming the array. I take the number that was put in, which was 3. I subtract 1 from it to get it down to 2, because when I'm working with an array, 3 entries will go 0, 1, 2. Okay? So I redim the array, and the array will now have the right number of things in it. I then set up and show the things when I do the gather. In the gather amount, sorry about that, in the gather amount, I take and put things into the array. So the start gather just finds out how many and sets things up, enabling and disabling the buttons. And then the button gather amount, when I click that, it will start taking in the data. Okay, so I typed in the amount field, a 12, then a 25, then a 2. So those were the 3 entries, and they went into the array, and they're also showing into the box. When I've got them all, I disable the things that were allowing me to gather, and I enable the connect. I enable the continue. So the continue is going to ask how many more things do I want to put into the box. And there is a second group of entries, so I am going to be able to add things to my array. Now notice when I do that, I'm going to do it with redim preserve. That means I want to keep what is in the original array and add to it. If I put another redim, then it would go back and just redo the array. And I don't want to do that. I want to preserve what's in there. Okay, so the redim preserve does that for me. So I'm adding more things to the array and going through a loop and adding more things to an array. And then I didn't show it, but the show contents, you can see very briefly, is where I go in and I show that there are indeed now 5 things in the array. The next thing we looked at was the bubble sort. And the bubble sort is fairly clearly laid out in the slides. And if I missed one of them, then look at the original PowerPoint. This is a generic version of the logic for a bubble sort. So my subscripts are 1 and 2. When I imply, when I do this in Visual Basic, I would be changing the subscripts to 0 and 1, because Visual Basic starts with a subscript or an index of 0. So I started out with 5 numbers. The original numbers were 5, 6, 2, 3, 4. And I also had in memory a sub 1 and a sub 2, could have called them index 1, index 2, a hold area, an end point, which is how many entries there are, and a flip count, which tells me when I make a change, and the change that I'm going to make is to flip 2 numbers. In the bubble sort, the biggest number will bubble down to the bottom, and after each pass, I will get a number, an extra number, bubble down to the bottom. So the first pass is going to get 6 bubbled down. The next one is going to get 5 bubbled down. So I start out the bubble sort and I compare the first entry to the second entry. And the 5 is less than the 6, so I do nothing. Then, okay, it is not working right. So just a minute. There we go. Okay, then I add 1 to sub 1, and I add 1 to sub 2, so I'm now looking at the second and the third. 6 is greater than 2, so I need to flip it, because again, my goal is to get the biggest thing to the bottom. To flip it, I am going to use the hold area, because I can't flip the 6 and the 2 by moving the 6 to where the 2 is, because it would then wipe out the 2, or moving the 2 to where the 6 is, because then it would wipe out. So what I do is I take the 6 and move it to a hold area. Then I move the 2 up to where the 6 was, and then I move the hold area content back to where the 2 was. So I have flipped them successfully, and my numbers are 5, 2, 6, 3, 4. Then I add 1 to flip count, because this sort will end when I've either checked everything or I go through an entire pass without changing the flip count. Okay, so the next thing I do is add 1 to sub 1 and sub 2, and I compare the 6 and the 3. They need to be flipped, so I flip them, and I add 1 to flip count. Then I have add 1 to sub 1, add 1 to sub 2. I have the 4 in sub 1 and a 5 in sub 2. That means that I compare 6 and 4. They need to be flipped, and I flip it. Now I add 1 to sub 1 and 1 to sub 2, and my problem is that sub 2 is greater than the endpoint, so the pass is complete, and I have locked the 6 in at the bottom. I'm not going to get out based on the flip count, because indeed I did do flipping. Okay, so then I reset sub 1, and I reset sub 2. I set sub 1 at 1, sub 2 at 2, and I change the endpoint, because I've now locked in the 6 at the bottom, so I don't need to worry about that. So I change the endpoint to 4, and flip count I reset to 0. Again, when you code this in Visual Basic, you'd be having a 0 in sub 1, a 1 in sub 2, and endpoint would have started with a 4, and now it would be down to a 3. Okay, so I now change the 5 and the 2, and they need to be flipped. So what I'm going to do is a series of flips that end up moving the 5 down. And when I flip, I add 1 to flip count. Okay, so the next thing I compare is the 5 and the 3, and they need to be flipped. And then I compare, and I keep moving down. When I finish that pass, the 5 and the 6 are both going to be locked at the bottom, and I'm going to reset the subs to 1 and 2 and reset the endpoint to 3. Okay, I then compare 2 and 3 and they're okay. I compare 3 and 4 and they're okay. I compare 4 and 5, or actually I don't. I have hit the endpoint when I add 1 to sub 1 and 1 to sub 2. I have hit the endpoint, and at that point the flip count stayed 0 for the entire pass. The numbers are in order, and so my sort is done. So the next thing I did was go and look at the code for this. Okay, so I have set up the code to do this. As you will notice here, the endpoint is 4, okay, it's because I am doing the 5 numbers, but the endpoint is going to be 4. Flip count, I made a 9, and the reason I made flip count a 9 was the do until that you can see here. I want do until endpoint equals zero or flip count equals zero, which means I want to do it until there's nothing more to check or I got through a pass without doing any flips. So if I'd set flip count to zero, then I would never have ended this loop. So I needed to artificially set flip count to something that would allow me to enter the loop. Notice as soon as I get in the loop, I set flip count to zero. So it didn't matter what I set it to. I chose to set it to 9. I then also give sub 1 the value of 0 and sub 2 the value of 1. In the loop, I'm asking the if statement. And the if statement is basically saying if the thing sub 1 is pointing to, which in this example would be a 5, the first pass, is greater than the thing sub 2 is pointing to, which would have been a 6 in the first pass, then I flip them. And I flip them by putting the thing that sub 1 is pointing to into the hold area, putting the thing sub 2 is pointing to into the area that sub 1 is pointing to, and moving the hold area down and moving that into the thing that sub 2 is pointing to. So I have flipped them. And I add 1 to flip count. Okay, the next slide is comparing what I did in the PowerPoint with what I'm doing here. If there is a no flip, I don't have an else on that if statement. Because if I don't need to flip, I'm doing nothing. In either case, after the if statement is complete, I increment sub 1 and I increment sub 2. Okay? After I finish the loop, then I reset endpoint, go back to the loop, and continue on. At the end, I am saying I want to see everything, so I did a for loop to show everything in the array in the box. Okay. And I went through and showed a couple of comparisons as I did it, and then showed that the result of the sort had everything sorted. The next thing I looked at was the top-down sort, and I looked at that because that's the one that I'm asking you to write. So it's a slightly different version of the sort. I've got numbers from 15, 36, 24, 12, and 20. I start sub 1 out at 1. And I start sub 2 out at 2. Apparently, I did not take a picture of that because the first one is showing sub 2 at 3. And that would have to be after I had already done one comparison. So I checked the original numbers 15 to 36 and I didn't need to do any kind of flip. Then what I do differently in the top-down is I leave sub 1 alone, and I change sub 2. So I can then compare to 15 to 24, and they don't need a flip. You'll see that when I compare the next one, it will be 15 to 12, and they will need a flip. So when I compare 15 to 12, I do the flip, and I end up with the 15 where the 12 was and the 12 where the 15 was, so I end up with 12, 36, 24, 15, 20. Okay. Now, what happens here is I keep going. Notice there's no flip count because I do not count flips in this one. When sub 2 gets to be 6, which is outside the range, okay, then the path is done. And what I do is to reset. I add 1 to sub 2 because I'm now going to compare everything to the second element. And I take sub 1 and add 1 to it to get sub 2 so that I will always start out a path looking at the thing that is right after what sub 1 is pointing to. So I'm going to be comparing 36 to 24, and they need a flip. Okay, so I flip them, and I end up with 12, 24, 36. And then I move on, and I'm going to compare to 15, and they also need a flip. 24 to 15 also needs a flip. And then I'm going to compare 15 to 20, and that doesn't. So the smallest two numbers have now been locked in. At the end of pass one, the smallest number was locked in as the first element. Okay, remember with the bubble sort, it locked in as the last. Here, the first pass locks in the first number, and the second pass locks in the second number. Okay. So now I add 1 to sub 1, and it's now a 3. I make sub 2 1 bigger than it, and 4. So that starts the path comparing 36 to 24, and they need to do a flip. So I flip them. And I am now going to add 1 to sub 2, compare the 3rd to the 5th, and they also need a flip, so I flip that. Okay, so I now have 12, 15, 24, and the 36 and 24 need to be flipped. And I will get all of the numbers in order. When sub 1 is incremented, it points to the last element in the table. That tells me that the sort is done. So you need to write this sort. The last thing on, I think it's slide 39, shows that I could have set up the array to hold both the number and the name. And when I flipped them separately or flip them both, depending on how I set up the array. If I have different arrays, then I would have to do the same flip for the name array that I did for the number array. If they are next to each other in the array, then I can just flip them together. Okay, and that shows the result of the top down. Now, I think there were a few slides that I didn't take pictures of, so I would go back and look at the entire PowerPoint. I also have the explanation for the last part of the class on a slide, on a audio, so I'm going to put that out there just because I think it's more interactive when I'm actually in class rather than sitting at home in front of my computer. So I will put that out, and you can look at that if you want to.